Oh, I'm getting a bunch of blank looks. I didn't think this was hard. When it comes to God's grace, I'm glad it's there. That's good. You weren't there before.
Can't be beaten.
Can't be beaten. Good. Do you believe there's an afterlife? Okay? Gotta have one. I'm thankful that God is a gracious God. Good. If you remember, we were talking about the root of bitterness last time. Would somebody like to read? That's a long one. You've got a great voice. You could be a public speaker. Okay? The first part is, see to it that nobody misses the grace of God. How do you miss the grace of God? Okay, this is talking... Okay, it's talking about each other here, and it's talking about see to it that you don't miss the grace of God, because when you do, a root of bitterness can come up. Hang on, we'll get there. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Another part of it is that people have different weaknesses. For some, they have trouble living with people. For others, it's sexual immorality or exchanging what God wants to give you for very little here. Yeah, some do. Depression, anxiety are the two biggies you look for in that situation. But yeah, that's true. Paul.
When Naomi left Moab to return to Israel, she got there. They said, "Hi, Naomi," and she said, "Don't call me that. Call me Mara," which means bitter, because God's done terrible things to me.
Yeah.
She was mad at God. And at that place, she had some choices about whether that swallowed her up or somehow her life changed to make it better.
Very good. Okay, somebody like to read the next one.
Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God gave you.
Okay. This is what to aim for as you go through your Christian life. And some people are going to miss it. And so he's giving a warning. These are the things to shoot for. If you have targets, these are the targets. Now, you're not going to be guilty of all of them. You might be guilty of one of them, or maybe more than one. But he's saying these aren't healthy for the body. And what's going to happen if they're present, bitterness is going to sort of rule. Y'all remember that from last week, right? Y'all shake your heads this way, make me feel good at least. Okay. But you can still be bitter. And dealing, I've done this a long time, preaching. 44 years, something like that. And I still run into people who are really bitter. So how can you keep from being bitter? Why do people feel like take it on? And how can you exchange it?
The perspective there was he wasn't grateful for how he'd been forgiven, and he let bitterness come up inside of him to say, "Give me, give me, give me," because he wanted what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think to draw it into this one here is if you understand how much you received, you won't feel like you've been shortchanged, because that's usually where bitterness comes, is when you feel like you've been shortchanged. Somehow you got the raw end of the deal. And if you say, no, I've got the love of God and I've got the grace of God, the forgiveness through Christ, that's a huge, huge thing that everything else is pales in comparison.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Hang on, I'm coming around the corner to catch you here, okay? First thing that you need to know is, why are you choosing to be bitter? People don't do something without a payoff. What that means is there's a reward to the behavior, or you don't do the behavior. Okay. If you would give me 3 weeks at any congregation, I could tell you who the bitter people are. Well, the reason, this is how to tell. This is how to tell. Hold on. First thing, I did that again. First thing that you've got to get is, why are you doing this? And one of the reasons, it gives you the illusion that you are powerful. Let's see, I can pick on Jim. Okay, you want to be mad at me, you want me mad at you. Okay, I'm not talking to him anymore. I'm going to avoid him. I'm going to sit on the opposite side of the church, and he's going to know that I'm really upset with him. Do people feel that way? You ever hear somebody say, I'm not going to talk to him anymore. I'll teach him a thing or two. That's the illusion of power. If I don't talk to him, he's missing out on something. He may not.
I'm not going to give them any money anymore.
Yes, that's another one. I didn't put that one up there, but you're brilliant. You must have a husband that really helps you a lot. Yes. Well, I'm not talking to you anymore. You all see the illusion of power, though. Now, if I'm mad at Jim, I can get some people to get mad at Jim. Miss Beverly, I can get her mad at Jim. I can tell him about all this bad stuff he's done to me and how he's mistreated me and how he's been terrible to me. And that's the illusion of power. I can wreck his life. I can make him hurt. Y'all see it? Happens a lot. You believe it's punishment. We'll go back to Gemini. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. And I think I'm punishing you. And you're sitting there going, goodness, thank goodness he's not going to talk to me anymore. I don't have to deal with that. You just leave him alone. Here, I think I'm punishing him, but I'm not. You get angry at God. He's the ultimate one. If you read the Psalms and David, it's a yo-yo. David's happy with God. David's mad at God. It's a false power. Job's friends came and they gave him this, and it was a false power. Job, we know why God's punishing you. No, that's not it, but they thought it was. So Naomi's choosing to say, God, you took my husband, you took my son. I'm just really mad that you've done this to me, who's been faithful to you in the worst of circumstances. It's a good book, yeah. Okay. Ask yourself about the consequences. We pick up this behavior because that's the way the world around us works. It tries to do the punishing, and we pick it up because we heard that at work, and we bring it home. Or we heard it in at the club, or we heard it at the gym, or we heard it at church. And it's not fair. So the second question to answer is, what are the consequences if you choose to be bitter? And these are big. The first one, if you get bitter, you're going to lose the ability to develop love in people. Now I'm going to give you one of those startling statements. Everybody here sins. And everybody here has little quirks who might offend you at time to time. And love overlooks those. A good example is my wife. I have some flaws. Y'all didn't know that, didn't you? No, you didn't know that. But she overlooks them so she can love me. If you get this thing about I'm going to treat people in a certain way, you're going to lose that ability because the cause is to overlook the flaws. And that's what grace is all about, okay? If you do it enough, it becomes a habit. If it becomes a habit, it will apply to everyone you know. You will start looking for the flaws.
Someone that takes everybody they see apart.
Mm-hmm. All they see is flaws. Like Chuck. He's retiring, you know that? He's retiring, and I'm not. Are you happy for him? You're happy I still have to work? I don't think I like you either. Okay, y'all get it. And we're getting better and better and better at giving methods to do this. Facebook, I had a teenager in my office who was devastated because somebody unfriended them. To them, it meant the whole world didn't like them.
They have no circle of friends because they have put everybody away because of their bitterness, and they're constantly seeing something wrong with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're lonely and don't know why. I don't have anybody. Nobody cares about them.
Yeah.
But you pushed everybody away.
And then you can blame the whole congregation. Nobody has been around for me. Nobody's cared about me. They're not very good Christians to let that happen.
It's always someone else's fault.
Yep, it sure is. It sure is. Okay, third, look at the consequences of forgiving. I can't say this one enough. I made it in red because it's important. So this one's important. If you learn how to forgive, if you give them the things needed, it does away with your past. You're not fighting something for 10 or 15 or 20 years or 30. I had somebody that went over 50 years to talk about something that happened that upset her. 50 years. That's 50 years of the past. Let it go. If you don't, you're not going to be free to work on the idea of making relationships. Does that make sense to everybody? If you get to the point that you're in the past all the time and talking about what people did to you in the past, learn to let it go. Because when you let it go, you start getting the freedom to work on current relationships. Okay, past relationship didn't work. Time to let it go, forgive, forget, and move on. Learn how to make them work. Okay. Concentrate on making yourself a better person. Everybody's got some weaknesses. You know what yours are, I know what mine are, but concentrate on making yourself a better person. This sometimes means being the guy who steps up because they're a better person. Back to Jim. You didn't know you were going to beat up tonight. He can say to me after I've talked about all those things, you know, okay. Hey, I still love you, no matter what you do. Oh, that's a better person. You're ahead of me. I'll catch up to you. You usually are a little bit ahead of me every Wednesday night, so I'll catch up to you. No, okay. You can still choose to be bitter. But you can't choose to be bitter and be godly. over and over and over and over in the Bible, God says, you're upset, give it to me. Let me handle it, okay? Romans chapter 12, we looked at this last week. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil by good. I am getting looks with people who are getting defensive here. I'm not aiming at anybody. We're just talking about things that happen. Okay? Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Okay, let's go to the next one. Accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. One man's faith allows him to eat everything. Another man whose faith is weak eats only vegetable. The man who eats everything must not look down on him who does not. And the man who does not eat everything must not condemn the man who does. For God has accepted him. Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To his own master, he stands or falls, and he will stand. For the Lord is able to make him stand. This is just as pointed in the Greek as it is in English. It's actually one of those slaps where he says, who do you think you are? That you think you should be able to control other people. That you should be able to take revenge. Who do you think you are? Okay?
This year too, this is the grace of God.
Uh-huh.
God's grace can take care of his flaw and her flaw and her flaw and his flaw and your flaw.
Yeah.
And we just have different flaws. And it's all dependent upon God's grace because none of us would make it.
Well,
we wouldn't be able to stand without God.
You're doing very well here. The idea of turning it over to God, what does God know that you don't? Everything. He knows the motive of why you did what you did. And sometimes you do something, it just turns out wrong. But your heart wasn't bad. It just turned out wrong. Sometimes your heart is bad. God knows what you're saying, whether it's true or false. You probably don't. God knows what fits the crime and the consequences that'll get you thinking about what you did and how to improve. You can't do that. Okay?
God, like Roseanne was talking about, God knows where that person came from, what set of parents or environment he was raised in, mentored in, and so God understands. Somebody that was blessed with a
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this goes back to Chuck's point. She got taken to church from the day her mama could carry her there. I did not become a Christian until I was 19. So she has a big advantage. And she knew stuff that, she taught me stuff from day one of our marriage that I had to improve on. She's a good teacher. Okay. So then, men ought to regard us as servants of Christ and as those entrusted with the secret things of God. Now, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. I care very little if I'm judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear. That doesn't make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, judge nothing before the appointed time. Wait until the Lord comes. He'll bring it to light what is hidden in the darkness and expose the motives of men's hearts. At that time, each will receive his praise from God. What do you see? You might think you're doing a great job. Okay, everybody, Paul says, don't judge. You're trying. Rest on God's grace. Don't worry about what everybody else thinks. That is so big. You know what everybody else will think? Anything they want to. Mm-hmm.
And as far as consequences, we want to give them their punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you saying God's the one who meets out the punishment?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that sink into our head when we grow up all of our lives saying, punch me, I punch you. When you take mine, I take yours.
Yeah, you have lessons with Sue. that's what I did. It's realizing, first of all, life is not fair. It is not fair. The shooting in Florida, which one of those kids deserved to die more than the other? None of them. Life's not fair.
But our society is trying to make it fair.
It tries to. But it doesn't, never has. Yeah, that's Luke 13. But life's not fair, and if you want to make life fair, good luck.
You know what, Mike, this man in Chicago who did field maintenance for either the Cubs or the White Sox, I can't remember which team, but he was in prison falsely.
Uh-huh.
He was in there for about 20 years. Can't remember the crime, but he was released. They did DNA tests and they released him. And he was so happy to be called back to work on the field. You know, and two of the guys who worked with initially, they met him there. And you know, I said, you know, I don't know how he feels inside, but I said, you know what? Looked like he just let it go, appearance-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was happy just to be able to work and support his family and be around his family. And I thought that was a wonderful example of letting it go, and the others around him, they also let it go. And it seemed like that helped him. another step forward.
It does. You have to accept, though, life's not fair. Because it really, really isn't.
You know, the one that was forgiven so much and the other was forgiven, and he couldn't forgive the other one. But, you know, we want to punch them in the face instead of forgiving them. And we forget how much God has forgiven us. The, you know, whatever they did was nothing compared to what we've done. And the consequences that resulted in Jesus' death. It, you know, they're nothing anybody does to us is in comparison.
Right. Very good. James, submit yourselves to God, resist the devil, he will flee from you, come near. And God, he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. Brothers, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother, against his brother, or judges him, speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor?
Can a Christian serve on the jury?
Yeah.
Judgments?
No.
Not the judgment.
It's not the judgment. You're weighing the evidence, but you're not making judgments. You say this is, yeah, but it's on evidence. This is speaking about eternally, not something down here. And it's another one of those, who do you think you are to judge your brother? He actually says, why not be wronged? Okay. Big warning. I'm going to pop some balloons. Okay? If you disagree, come see me. Anybody like to read that? Okay, did you get the three phases? Something against your brother, you go to him, just the two of you. If that doesn't work, you take somebody with you. And if that doesn't work, you tell it to the church. Okay, here comes the balloon popping. I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where there are two or three that come together in my name, there I am with them. The context of that verse is not if you get two people worshiping God, God will be there. The context of that verse is, listen, This thing about being united to your brother is important. And because it's so important, if you'll run this thing and you'll get your brother back, Jesus says, you can be sure I'll be right there.
Can you go back to the previous slide for just a moment?
I think. Okay.
Verse 17 is an aha moment that I apologize for saying this, but I think we miss it. Because when we read that, we say, aha, what Jesus is saying is that they won't listen to anybody. Just go away from them, shun them, leave them alone. Just, they're bad stuff, don't get near them. That's not what he's saying.
Mm-mm.
What he's saying is, how would you treat a pagan or a tax collector? Well, you invite them. He went to Matthew, tax collector. Come follow me. Well, no, that's not how you're supposed to know. He's saying, look, what you do is you treat them like they are at the beginning again, and you go back and you try to bring them from the beginning. He's not talking about stay away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Treat them mean. But yet that's what we teach.
Yeah, I've heard that talk, yeah.
We look at that and we say, well, if you're treating them like a pagan or a tax collector, they won't listen, so you just stay away from them and you don't. And he says, watch me. How do I treat pagans? How do I treat tax collectors? As though they need more help than anyone else. So I'm going to love them more.
Very good. Excellent. I didn't think of all that. The thing about two or three, if you worship God by yourself, He is there. If you think of the prophets, a lot of times they were by themselves. They still had a relationship with God.
Well, an example of that, Mike Bonilla's presentation a couple weeks ago, astronauts, not all astronauts together believe the same thing, but some of them worshiped God.
Uh-huh. Okay. Any questions on that? Oh, y'all are doing good. Here's how you get around. I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to do this as fast. Learn to set boundaries. What's a boundary? How many of y'all own property? One. Two. Three. Okay, who do I want to pick? Jim. I'll pick on you. Don owns property? Ah. Do you have property lines? Why? You know where you end and the next guy begins. That's a good definition of what a boundary is. You know when you end and the next guy begins.
What sort of heritage all of the property? But I have a neighbor on one side that has a fence.
Uh-huh.
Along the boundary, a neighbor on the other side.
Uh-huh. Until you learn to set boundaries, you will not give the consequences necessary to change behavior. You will not give the consequences necessary to accept for the person who's doing the wrong to change behavior. I'll get to that again here. And you will, you're limited in what you can do. Okay? So far, so good. No? Okay. These are your limitations. You know where you begin and you know where you end. That's the only way Don can know if his neighbor's dumping the trash on his land or not, is the boundary. Understand that. The boundary's there because you cannot make somebody pay for his wrongdoing. You might think you can, but you can't. The second thing, if you don't know where you end and the next guy begins, you're very limited in the ability to apply consequences. Consequences are not punishment. Consequences are to get the person to think about what they're doing. We'll get to it here in a second, okay? You can't force another person to be aware of your feelings. They don't feel what you feel. And last, your communications ability are limited. It is up to the listener whether he hears you or not. There's a thing in marriage counseling that, I don't like to say this, but 90-some percent of men are guilty of. And that is called the stonewalling. The wife comes with a complaint. The guy goes like this. And she's sitting there and she's yelling and yelling and he's going like this. Now, she thinks he's listening. But what he's doing is, I can't wait until the ogre goes away and I don't have to listen to this anymore. And I can go on and see the game and I don't have to put up with this anymore. It's just, he's just waiting for her to stop. Okay. Here are the things. We got to go through these a little fast. First, how do you set up boundaries? Well, the first thing you got to do is learn to say no. I am amazed how many Christians do not think they can say no. I'm just amazed. Because Jesus did it all the time. The generation asked for a miraculous sign, and Jesus says, isn't coming. I'm not doing you any miraculous signs. It's not going to happen. In Mark chapter 1, Peter's mother-in-law is sick. Jesus heals her. And he spends the rest of the day casting out demons, healing, teaching. Night comes, they all go home. Next morning, they're all back. But Jesus is left. He's not in his room. So they go out looking for him. And they find him out in the hills praying. And they say, man, are we glad to find you. This is my paraphrased edition. You ought to see the people back home. And Jesus says, we're not going back there. But that's not why I've come. Do you know how many people he just said no to? Everybody that was around the block waiting for him to come and do stuff for them. So Jesus said no often. When Herod asked him for a miracle, Jesus said no. So if Jesus can say no, we can say no. What you think, do what you think, regardless if others disagree. John 9, verse 1, it talks about a man blind from birth. And the disciples say, why is he blind? Did his parents sin or did he? And Jesus says, neither. So he makes some cakes, he put it on the eyes. He says, go wash in the pool of Siloam. He does. And he comes back seeing, and all the people around say, is this who we think it is? Isn't this the blind guy? And then he gets in front of the Pharisees. This man's not holy. This isn't a miracle. He did it on the Sabbath. You think Jesus might know that he would probably come across and say, this is the Sabbath, and he's healing blind people. Yeah. But it was right. And so he did what was right regardless of the reaction. By the way, how can a sinner do miraculous signs? Guess who rules that was? That a sinner cannot do miraculous signs. It was the Pharisees' rule. Kind of neat. Know your limits and admit when you've reached them. Acts 19. Man sees Paul casting out demons, and he says, I think I'd like to try that. There's seven of them. And the demons say, hey, we know Paul and we know Jesus, but we don't know you. And they beat him up and let him on his way. He doesn't know what he can do. He doesn't know what his limits are. Now, there's a perfect example, and if you ever tell her I said this, I will probably deny it. My daughter, she says yes much too often. And her husband, who tells me these things, says, before you accept one more thing, you've got to get three things off your plate. And he won't let her do it until she gets three things off her plate. If you know your limits, that's good. If you don't know your limits, find somebody that'll tell you, get some things off your plate before you add to them. Last one. Confront problems when they arise. This is where you speak truth. Truth and love. It's not easy to say you're wrong to somebody or you messed this up, you need to get this straight. But that's what love does. That's what Christianity does. And establish consequences. A consequence is getting something that'll make him think about it. Cain killed Abel. And God goes to him and he says, life's going to be hard for you from now on. You might plant your crops, but they're not going to be very good. And you're going to have to leave the land and go to another place. And Cain says, it's too hard for you to do that to me. He didn't take God's warning not to kill his brother. But whenever he had to pay a consequence, he realized, man, I've just done myself in. Consequences are necessary. Where are they hardest to apply? Children. Children can come and they can talk to you. And my daughter got 3 speeding tickets the first week she had her license in Pittsburgh. She looked at me and said, Dad, you're the chaplain of the police department. I said, I am. She said, you get these taken care of. I said, I could. And she says, you're not going to, are you? I said, nope. We loaned her the money to pay the fines at 10% interest. She has not got another speeding ticket since. Kids who have credit cards, if they overrun them, you might need to take the credit card. If they want money, you might have to say no. Co-signing is not a good answer because it obligates you if they don't do it. Okay? Everybody's with me. Great class. Thanks for being here.